Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also pleased to have here on the program once again Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And monthly, on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about things that grow in the home, landscape, lawn and garden care. So we can take questions on trees and shrubs, ornamental stuff, stuff you eat, houseplants, any and all of that. If you've got questions, you can give us a call. She's given me the big shrug like, whatever.
I say everything but mold in the refrigerator. Okay, very good.
Everything but mold in the refrigerator. Well, you got a question, she will, I know, do her best to give you an answer. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. Well, it's very nice, once again, to have you here.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. Unusually warm here. I was the other day I was surprised. I was watching old Mike Sola. He was doing the weather forecast the other night, and he actually said that for Champaign-Urbana, the average date of first frost would be Friday.
And we're not going to have,
I don't think we're expecting any time, probably not even maybe within the next couple of weeks, that we would have temperatures down that low. So it's also been dry. It's been warm and it's been kind of on the dry side.
Right. So I've even watered things that normally I would never water in October.
Yeah.
It's just never been an issue.
Yeah. So that's something though, I think it, you know, maybe, I don't know if you want to talk some more about that, but that, and I know certainly around my yard, I see stuff that looks like it's, you know, that's yellowing or that's things like hosta. And that look like really, I'm sure that's what it is, that they just haven't gotten enough water.
And I had transplanted some hostas, and so I went ahead and watered them. And I would think even, you know, anything that maybe was newly transplanted, you know, any perennial kinds of things, certainly. But certainly any trees, you know, if you have young trees, this is not the time to be forgetting about those. And really we consider that, you know, young trees aren't established until at least, you know, 3 years, 4 years down the road. So even if it was put in a year or so ago, then still remember to keep watering them. And really even, you know, if the leaves are starting to go ahead and change colors, I'd still go ahead and water the soil. You want to make sure that the roots and stuff are well hydrated going into winter. It's not the time for plants to be drying out and going under stress before they head into winter.
Yeah. So hopefully here now in the next couple of days here we're going to get some rain. I don't know that we're expecting any huge amounts, but we're going to get something.
Right. It would certainly help. You know, we'd like to have maybe an inch of water a week, you know, some way, shape, or form. So that's good. And then certainly evergreens, you know, there's another one of those that really you want to make sure that they're well hydrated or they tend to get a lot of winter stress, certainly browning in the needles, those kind of things. So you want to make sure that's not an issue for you. I did want to say something because I got a couple calls about it, is the fact that white pines, it's a natural thing for white pines for their inner needles to turn yellow right now. And I've gotten a couple calls, people just really worried about their white pines. But if it's just the inner needles, not the outside needles, the new needles, if it's the inner needles that are turning yellow, it's actually kind of pretty. It's kind of this pretty yellow color or even kind of an orange. That's perfectly normal for white pines. They tend to do that where they kind of just lose their needles kind of all at one time, those old needles. So don't be concerned about that. Now, if you've got, you know, needles on the outside edge that are not looking all that good, then there may be something else going on. But those inner needles, don't worry about it.
All right. We have a couple of people here ready to go. We'd certainly welcome other questions. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number. And it's 800-222-9455. We'll start off with someone in Urbana in line one. Hello.
Hi, good morning. I had a house demolished, and I'm using that space for a garden now. And I thought I was being smart, and I wanted to get some real rich soil in there instead of just the usual junk that might be brought in. And I ended up with truckloads of the, I'll call it composted leaf mulch from the Urbana yard waste reclamation site. And seems like I've had mixed results. In tomatoes went crazy. Some of the grass that I planted on the perimeter seems like it's just doesn't look real healthy. It's kind of yellow or dies back. And I'm wondering if it's probably very rich in humus, but maybe lacking in minerals of some kind. And I wonder if you've ever had any experience with what suggestions to what I might add or a place I could get the soil tested and find out if it's missing something major.
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas?
Mm-hmm. Well, normally we've had really good success. And when I say we've for many years now, we've gotten the compost and mulch and stuff from the Landscape Recycling Center out at the Idea Garden. And we've always had really good luck with it. I mean, it's really an excellent product. And I'd encourage anybody to go out and get it. You know, it's a local product. You know, it's not being trucked in from somewhere else, those kind of things. So there's lots of reasons to use our local Landscape Recycling Center. And so generally it's very good. And from what I found is that it generally has really, you know, because people tend to rake leaves and they rake up the tennis balls and the dog toy and all that other stuff, that sometimes in the past, you know, there'd be this debris in there. And I've noticed the last few years we haven't had that problem at all. So it tends to be a very clean product. So that's really good, too.
There's been a little bit of plastic and gravel.
Yeah,
in there,
unfortunately, when people, rake, they don't always take all the garbage out. So we end up with all this other stuff that comes in. But it's generally a very clean product. And generally, it's not been, from what I've seen in this way, a nutrient issues. Now, obviously, you know, I don't know how thick you had this. Was it really thick on top?
About a foot and a half thick.
A foot and a half thick?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's compost.
It is.
Okay. So realizing, of course, that it's compost and not soil, you know, for some plants, they're not going to like that when you have it that thick. Normally, we'd probably recommend that you actually mix it with the soil. So then you get your nutrients and then you sort of
make the soil that they were bringing in to fill the hole was...
was bad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they just dig up clay from somewhere and dump it in. And,
And even mixing, and actually compost is a really good amendment for clay.
Uh-huh.
You know, it really helps it along. So you're probably just dealing because of this high organic matter, humus kind of soil. Some plants just don't like that.
Right.
So you're probably sort of dealing with that. I don't know if you have an opportunity now where you actually could put some good soil in with it or on top of it or something when you have it a foot thick that's really pretty thick. So I think you're probably just seeing a matter, and it probably has more to do with just the water relationships is what I'm guessing within that compost. I'm guessing on a lot, probably most. Now, when you say grass, was that ornamental grass or turf grass?
No, turf grass.
Okay, okay. And the other thing with humus sometimes is that when it dries out, it really dries out.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to be almost, depending on what the composition of it is, but sometimes it actually can repel water a little bit. So I would, again, I'd probably guess.
Maybe I need to buy some truckloads of soil.
Not necessarily a truckload, but if there's some way you could get some soil in with that. Yeah, it sounds like you have a very large area.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you certainly could get a soil test, kind of see what's going on there. Usually the compost that I've seen is pretty degraded to the point where it's probably not going to be a big issue. If it wasn't degraded very much, you certainly could get some nitrogen deficiencies and those kind of things, you know, as the stuff continues to degrade. So
I've never had soil tested. How do I go about that?
Actually, you can. There's a couple of soil labs in town. You can certainly check the telephone yellow pages, those kind of things for soil labs. There is one on North Mattis, ASM Labs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Agricultural Service Management or something, ASM Labs. But it's way out on North Mattis. There's also, I think, Align AFS also takes in soil samples. So you may just want to kind of check in your area. You usually just want to try and get a composite of different soils. So get a clean bucket, take a cup of soil from several different areas within that area, mix that together, and then get your final sample from that rather than just taking it from one spot. And usually they only need about a cup of soil.
Okay.
But it's a great place to start out. You could find out kind of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you'd have to have a truckload of soil, but you might seriously think about maybe in some areas, certainly the plants that aren't doing well in those areas, you might think about at least top dressing with soil or helping to get some more soil in there.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your advice.
Good idea. Good basic idea.
Well, so. I think it was a good idea. Maybe I should have, you know, bought some topsoil
from
somebody else and mixed it together and hoped for the best with what got trucked in.
Yeah, with that much compost, you're almost making a bog.
Great. Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Good luck. Next, we'll go to Bloomington, Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hi. I have a suffering apple tree.
Uh-oh.
It's suffering from shade. When I first planted this tree, the trees around it were not big enough to shade it. But now, those trees they almost completely shade it, so I get very few apples.
Right.
And the poor tree has leaned over about 45-degree angle. But out of the base of the trunk of this tree, now the trunk is leaning at about a 45-degree angle, and out of the base of the trunk has grown a couple of small limbs. You'd call them suckers. I think most people would call these things suckers.
Right,
and
right.
But they're growing straight up. Now, the trunk is leaning at 45 degrees, but these suckers are growing straight up.
Right.
So I got a big idea.
I think I know where you're going with this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to cut off the front just above the suckers, dig out the root. Well, I'm going to have to cut the roots. You can't dig out all the roots, and it'd be a terrible big job. And transplant that tree with those suckers sticking straight up into a more sunny place. I got a nice sunny place that I can transplant it. Well, is that a viable idea?
And how long has this tree been in there?
Oh my, it's 20 years.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And I'm thinking that those suckers then will become the main limbs and they'll grow up and form a new apple tree.
Right. They'll certainly form a new apple tree. More than likely, it won't be the apple tree you purchased.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Trees are, the apple trees and actually a lot of the fruit trees are grafted.
Yeah, I know. And you think it's below the graft?
Yep. I'd almost bet. Or actually, because a lot of times the graft is this right at the soil union I'd almost bet because you're just running the risk. And if you want to try, you certainly can try it. I think you might also have a hard time digging it up.
Oh yeah.
Because it's been in there for so long.
Right.
So I guess you kind of have to decide, do I really want this badly enough to put that much energy into it, or would I just rather buy a new apple tree and know what it is and plant it somewhere else? But, obviously that's something I think probably odds are maybe against you.
Yeah.
Or maybe about a 50-50 chance. I don't know. Yeah, probably about a 50-50 chance that they're going to be able to dig it up and keep it alive.
Oh yeah. Well, hey, listen. An adventure.
Sure. I mean, you never know, and it might be something that you might find, quickly that you can go ahead and do that. But I'd almost guarantee that what you end up with, it'll still be an apple tree, but what you end up with is going to be somewhat of a mystery for a while.
Yeah, those beautiful red, delicious apples will turn into crap apples, won't they?
Could be. Could very well be. And that's why I'm wondering if it lives, is it really something you want?
Yeah.
So I think probably, and then, there's great varieties out there now.
Right.
Just super varieties. Actually, Purdue, Rutgers, Illinois has done a lot of work on different types of apples now. There's a new one called Juliet that's supposed to be really apple scab resistant. So there's some great, just disease resistant apples that I think you might find in the long run are well worth the effort to plant those instead.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you. Is it possible now to find, if, say, you'd like to try, growing your own apples, is it possible now to find varieties where they do have enough resistance so that you're not going to have to do a lot of spraying? Because I think that's, for some people, they'd say they just don't want to get into that.
Apples. And I think that's what was so exciting about this new variety called Juliet is the fact that it was, because apple scab is probably, our big disease problem. I mean, we're always, you pretty much always are going to have a problem with apple scab. So that was real exciting to get a variety like that. There's also some other ones out there, Prima. There's actually, if you go on the U of I website, ACES website, the Agricultural College website, you can actually find out a lot of information about different types of apples. I think if you just go ahead and Google that. On ones that have come out of the U of I program as well as the Purdue Rutgers program. So I think that's great. Sometimes they're a little harder to find. I think the varieties are harder to find in that they don't show up in they don't always show up in the local garden centers. So you have to do a little bit more effort to find them and probably have to order them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the biggest problem is actually, securing the tree themselves. But there's certainly plenty out there. There's lots of information to know which ones. I would look for something that resistant to apple scab for sure. And that would probably be number one. Coddling moth, the little caterpillar is always our other big problem is certainly with those. And that you have to sort of take care of a number of other ways. But there are certainly some other pesticides that aren't necessarily what we traditionally think of as pesticides that are much safer, those kind of things that could be used for like coddling moth.
And I wouldn't know what your average size for, a reasonable size tree to start out with would be, but I guess I'm wondering, well, how many years really would you have to wait for the tree to get established and to get any sort of significant kind of production out of
the tree? It's not as long as you might think. Especially with these newer varieties, that's why they graft them is because they're trying to get these, early production, quick production, lots of apples, those kind of things. So I'm trying to think on, I have one, a gold, Royal Gala, And it's probably been in there 4 years now. In this fourth year, it's full of apples.
Oh,
so that's,
uh-huh.
you know, four years, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So, and even I had a few apples even before that, but this has been its first big year. And we were talking, this has been a great year for apples. So that would be one thing to think about. And, you know, and then the bottom line is we have some great growers around here. You know, if all else fails, we have apple orchards around here, and you could certainly get local apples, and they have great apples and those kind of things.
Okay.
So it's something you have to kind of think about. Apples are not the easiest care plants, I would say, in the world.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County monthly. On Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, and we have some other folks to talk with. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Yeah, being a procrastinator, when does my window of opportunity close? Or planting or putting down grass seed. And I also, I'd like to maybe I've heard your program about clover and stuff and putting down maybe, I guess, what is a clover seed? So how much time do I have?
Well, you're about a month late. I mean, to be honest with you, you know, usually we say, you know, mid-August into sort of mid-September is really the best time to establish grass by seed.
Okay, what about...
You really want it to get established, have a good root system, well established before we really get into the cold stuff. So you're kind of taking a little bit of a chance here. Now, we've had warm weather here, and who knows, you know, the warm as it's been. But the problem is it's not going to be very well established once we really get a cold spell.
Okay, what about spring then?
So spring, usually we're looking at the month of April is really a good time to be
well,
thinking about that.
Okay, well, then it gives me...
You could wait till April. The only thing is, you know, if you could have done it a month or so ago, fall is actually a better time normally to start grass from seed because we have less weed seed pressure. We don't have as many weeds popping up, those kind of things. Generally, the temperature's good. The moisture's good. So, you know, overall, fall is the best time, but or late summer, I guess, is really what it is. But if all else fails, April's good.
Okay.
You could cover, do you have bare soil right now? Or
Yeah. But maybe do that, huh?
Well, you actually could use something like annual ryegrass or something like that just as a quick cover, just to try to get some cover on the soil so you don't get erosion issues. And it'll pop up, do its thing. It's a really horrible long-term grass, but it'll certainly pop up and do its thing and then kill it off next spring.
Yeah. Well, I knew you'd come through for me.
So you can wait till April.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Let's go to Geneva. This is line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, well, I got a couple of questions. Actually, you brought up pines. I'll answer this question. I know you're talking about lawn and gardens, but, you know, I have a tree company actually spraying stuff on my pines. Now, I've got a big problem. I want to say probably almost 50% of it, well, close to 50% of it, is starting to turn brown. It's been working through the summer, and I know they've had problems with white pine moss. But I'm at a dilemma. Do I keep putting money into them? Because I don't see really an improvement on it.
So what are the trees doing? They're Austrian pines. And then what are they doing?
Well, the needles, I know you talked about the needles being brown, but they've been brown. A lot of them have been dying back all summer.
But it's the new growth on yours.
Hard to tell on this. I saw some. It was kind of stunted.
Okay.
It really didn't grow as good as it did last year.
I've had to actually cut
some of the branches off the ground
up
to about the 4-foot level because they're all basically dead. It's all brown.
Right.
And I'm seeing spots. You know, I know the inside loses needles.
Right.
And like you're talking about, the yellow and they kind of drop off.
Right.
But it looks like the density... It's starting to go away a little bit.
Well, as soon as you said that the needles are stunted, they never quite come out. And unfortunately, Austrian pines are really susceptible to a fungal leaf disease. And it actually kills off the new growth, and, you know, stunts it. And it's really, and it does require sprays on a regular basis. You have to spray as they first start to candle. And usually it takes a couple more sprays of a fungicide just to try and control it. The problem is, and actually on the campus, they finally decided they were spraying for a while and finally decided it was just kind of a losing battle, to be honest with you. Because the fungus itself actually also hangs out on the old cones, the pine cones. And so technically you should be cleaning up the old pine needles and the pine cones. And it's just a lot of work to try to get rid of the disease. So
yeah, well,
you,
I've got, they're kind of in a in an area that's like 20 by 20, so I yeah. can probably get away with, you know, cleaning up all the old pine cones because they just let them, you know, leave everything
right.
drop down there. But
right.
the other thing I had a question about, too, was this Japanese bark beetle. I mean, the or I mean that the
the elm bark beetle?
No, for the
ash
trees.
The emerald ash borer.
Yeah, thank you. They also, the same people say there is spray that you can put out there to prevent, supposedly
right.
prevent this. Now, it's not, the reason I'm bringing all this up is because just so people know ahead of, you know, after I get off, it's very expensive. The people are mm-hmm. charging $250
yeah,
a pop.
Absolutely.
And it's like twice a year.
Right. Are you talking about for the pines or for the ash?
For the ash.
For the ash.
You know, for the pines, it's $150
yeah.
a spray, and that's two times a year. It seems like, and I've got a lot of trees in my backyard. They're all different kinds of varieties. I've got, you know, and one, there isn't one tree that doesn't have a problem. And
yeah.
I find it kind of odd with the growing season, having lived in California for years and come out here, you know, everything grows like crazy, but the problem is you can't keep one form, one species of tree without a problem. And it gets real expensive. The only one tree I know that doesn't have too much of a problem to me is a garbage silver maple. It's like a willow tree. They just they keep growing and growing, and it seems to be the only thing that's,
yeah.
you know, hardy enough to withstand and not have the disease. But anyway, I'll get
well,
off and listen. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. And actually brings up some excellent points. I think even with the Austrian, I think is a good example of you really have to decide, you know, is this something I want to, I have to do this every year. I have to spray this fungicide every year. This is a tree that gets not only this Spheriopsis tip blight, but also can get, you know, pine wilt, beetles. It can have some other problems. Is this something I really want to keep investing in? Are these trees worth investing in? And you have to make that decision. And, it, you know, if they're high-profile trees, it would be horrible to lose them, all those kinds of things. Then there may be some good reasons. And also, how good is the control? Is it really cleaning them up? Is it really helping? Those kind of things. And I think on the Austrians, without getting the pine needles out of there and the pine cones out of there where the fungus hangs around, it's just getting reinfected every single year. So is that, and it, so he has to make that decision. It may be an excellent time to think about, you know what, I'm going to cut my losses literally, and I'm going to pick a tree that I think is going to do much better for me. And there are certainly other trees out there besides silver maples. I know it may seem that way, but really, for the most part, the spruces don't have a big issue. You know, there's certainly some evergreens out there that you could think about putting out there instead of the Austrians. Are all trees don't have some problem somewhere along the line? You know, absolutely. I mean, we all have issues. Some of them are just more prone to others.
Mm.
So I think you kind of have to decide. Unfortunately, Austrian is just one that has a number of issues. So we can make a decision on that. On the ash, I think that's another one of those that generally we're not telling people to really do anything in the way of application right now until we know that the emerald ash borer is closer than it is now. I mean, Chinoa is the closest place that we've seen so far. If we find out later on that it's closer than that, it's been found closer, then people may decide they want to go ahead and treat. But again, it's going to have to be treatment every single year. Is this an investment I want to make? Do I want to just sort of sit, wait back, see what happens? All the trees aren't going to die overnight kind of thing. But maybe it'll be 4 or 5 years down the road. But right now, I want to invest in a different tree besides an ash. I want to get that one in place so it has some growth on it. So if once my ash finally dies, then at least I've got a tree that's going to take the place. So I think you have to make those kinds of decisions, but I hope people don't jump automatically to the conclusion that they have to treat, because
yeah.
that's certainly not the only option.
Yeah, don't treat it. Well, certainly don't treat it unless you know the problem is where you live. And for
yeah.
us in Champaign-Urbana, I think this summer there were reports of ash borer in McLean County.
Right, Chinoa, Bloomington.
Okay. And that was as close to
right.
us.
And that's
as,
so far that's
you know,
been as close.
And so far that's been as close. And even if it moves at normal rate.
Right.
Of course, it could be you know, who knows what could happen.
Firewood's been going to be a
that's the problem.
Don't
you know,
move
it could
firewood.
It could be a several years.
Sure. So maybe I want to go ahead and invest in something else. Maybe I want to get a ginkgo, which doesn't seem to have a lot of problems. So I think there's a lot of issues here, but don't automatically assume you have to spend the money and that your tree's going to die overnight. I should say, too, they had the purple traps out, people may have noticed,
mm-hmm.
Trying to see where the emerald ash borer is. Hopefully, in the next month or two, we'll find out what the results of those are. And so come spring, we may decide, you know, we change what kinds of things that we're saying because maybe maybe we find out it is already here. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. Sandy Mason's here with us. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Monthly on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is a caller in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I've got a question about a native plant. It's the native Passiflora incarnata. Maypop. Is it invasive?
Yeah. So have you had a problem with that?
No. I planted one, and I've got a second one in a pot, two different sources. They were selling it at a local plant place last spring as Cerealia, which it obviously wasn't. And it's doing beautifully. It's small, probably 8 or 9 feet up the side of the house.
Okay.
There's a sidewalk in front of it, so it's more or less contained in an area, maybe 4x4.
What I've seen, it tends to sort of send up these little suckers here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you mean away from the plant?
Away from the plant.
Yeah, spreading by the root.
Yep. And that that certainly could be an issue. I mean, and I was surprised. We actually had it at the Idea Garden for several years ago, out at the Master Garden Idea mm-hmm. Garden, and I was surprised how far they traveled and started popping up. It was easy to get rid of. It wasn't like it was a super woody plant or something where you're really having a problem with, like, kudzu or something like that, but it certainly was an issue. So you have to I would say that would be something I'd really think about on how well you can contain it or to let it go and you're fine.
The nearest, there's a lawn in front of it,
mm-hmm.
so it would presumably be mowed, and that, I imagine, would discourage its spreading.
Right, and you would just keep mowing it. You may find that it pops up a little faster than the grass does, mm-hmm. but certainly you would just keep mowing it to the point where you wouldn't have a big issue with it. So, but it is something to consider.
Is it as bad as, say, trumpet vine?
It's probably close to that, I would say, but because it doesn't get quite so woody, I don't think it's quite the problem. It definitely spreads out that far. If you've been familiar with trumpet vine, on how far away it seems like it sends up these little suckers,
mm-hmm. but
it'll certainly do that.
Probably not as bad as the Japanese.
Like honeysuckle. No.
Yeah, honeysuckle.
Like honeysuckle. Yeah, not so much that. You know, that we have probably more problem with that one because it spreads by the fruit. I mean, the one that actually produces fruit spreads mm-hmm. more that way than it does necessarily suckering up. So,
Do you have to have two clones to get cross-pollination? Because it hasn't produced any fruit yet, although it's bloomed nicely.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so, because we actually got a few fruits on ours.
You did, okay.
Yeah, so I don't think that's an issue. It probably has more to do with pollinators, I imagine.
I've never been able to get Cerealia to set fruit, even though I've tried hand-pollinating, and it has an abundance of pollen.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, what I wanted to do was to cross them.
Oh, there you go. Then you can name your own variety, and you'd be off.
But anyway, it isn't really a problem to grow it as long as you treat it with respect.
I think it's like any plant. Sometimes you have to kind of understand, if it's going to spread, is this something I'm willing to deal with? I'm not going to worry about it all that much. I wouldn't put it on the horrible list as in, oh my gosh, don't even think about it. I wouldn't put it on that list, but certainly realize it's going to sucker.
Well, I was talking actually to one of the people who was at the Idea Garden when you had the Passiflora.
Oh.
And she had the attitude that this was a horrible.
Yeah, I guess it's everybody's personal opinion. So.
Well, grown in those conditions, it probably was horrible.
Well, yeah, because it was pretty contained, or we needed it to be contained. So.
Well, then I'll continue growing it. And,
you want to leave it in a pot.
That's how I grow the Cerealia. It comes into the greenhouse every winter and goes out.
Yeah.
And supposedly it is hardy in the area, but doesn't come up until late June.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, good luck.
Yep.
All right.
Okay, sure.
Bye. We are a little bit past our midpoint here again, just to remind you that our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. You got some kind of problem, you need some advice, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk to somebody in Charleston. Line two, hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a lawn problem.
Okay.
This grass that turns brown in the wintertime, sage grass, I think it's called. Anyhow,
what's it again? I'm sorry.
It's a grass that creeps along the in the yard and it turns brown in the wintertime. And
what did you call it? I'm sorry.
I thought it was called sage grass. S-E-C-Z-E or something like that. Anyhow, it's spreading out of control.
It's not kudzu, is it?
Huh?
Kudzu? I'm not kudzu, I'm sorry. Zoysia grass or it's a weed?
Grass that's on the ground. You don't have to mow it very often. And but it's spreading. The problem is my neighbor is getting more hostile that it's going to get into her yard, and I don't know how to stop it. I had my grandson dig it up a couple of years ago, and the next year we had more than ever.
Okay.
It spreads by roots, I guess, instead of by seeds. You got any ideas?
Well, I guess we need to figure out what kind of grass it is or which grass it is. If it's one of the perennial grass, is it a real fine blade? I mean,
it doesn't have a blade. It's more like a creeping. It doesn't stand up very high.
Yeah.
And it crowds out all the weeds. I talked to one of my friends about it. She said, oh, I like it. It crowds out all the dandelions and everything else. But
it's a grass.
Well, he called it a grass, but technically it might not be a grass. See? Anyhow, it's spreading across my lawn. It's got a big patch now, and my neighbor's getting really excited that it's going to come into her yard. And so far, I haven't found any way to stop it.
Right. Is it like Creeping Charlie or something like that? It's not.
It's creepy. Yeah, it's creeping, that's for sure.
Probably. And the reason I'm asking all these questions is it really does make a difference on what it is. Because if it's an annual, it sounds like it must be a perennial. If it seems like the same.
It doesn't go away. It comes back every spring.
So the same plant seems to be coming back every spring.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
okay.
It turns brown, real brown in the wintertime.
Hmm. It almost sounds like there's actually a grassy weed called Nimblewill, which is a really fine-bladed grass, but you may not really even notice all that much. But it's a warm-season grass, so it tends to go yellow even, you know, in the fall once we start getting into cold weather, it actually gets quite yellowish looking. So I wonder if it's not Nimblewill. The problem is that with those perennial type of grasses is there's nothing selective that would kill it and not also kill your good grass.
Well, I was guessing that.
Right. So unfortunately, we don't have anything along those lines. You tried the method certainly of digging it up, because that would be one thing, is just trying to dig it up. And then try to reseed and resod those areas. But sometimes you have to really dig a large area to make sure you get all the roots, which may have been the problem you had before.
We did dig out several square yards.
Yeah.
But it came back in exactly the same place where we dug it out.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the roots are really something else, aren't they? So
one of my other friends said that it won't cross a sidewalk barrier. In other words, the neighbor on my south, it won't go to her because I got the driveway.
Oh, there's a driveway? Then I'm not sure they should be worried, because it pretty much creeps. I mean, it does form seeds or can form seeds, but it does creep. But that would be, it's not one that's going to, like, mint or something that's going to go underneath a sidewalk or a...
No, but my neighbor to the north, see, there's no sidewalk.
Okay, so they're worried about it creeping over.
So she's really worried about it.
Okay,
and I'm trying to have a good neighbor.
And I commend you for that, because that's good. It's always good to have good neighbors. So I think that, unfortunately, since we don't have anything selective, you'd have to kill it out in other ways. Whether you try to kill it off by covering it, that would be one thing. But then you'd have these brown spots, and then you have to kind of wait for it to die off. You certainly could use one of the non-selective herbicides, like Roundup or Cleanup or one of those kind of products when when it's green. It has to be actively growing for those kind of products to use, and then wait for it to die, wait a week or so, make sure it's dead, and then come in and reseed or resod in those areas. So unfortunately, with those perennial grasses, we just don't have a whole lot of options other than...
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for that. But it's not going to go underneath sidewalks and stuff. So at least that neighbor doesn't have to worry about that too much.
No, that neighbor's not worried. But it's the one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, but certainly in those areas. But you might want to take it into the local extension office. And I'm sorry, I don't remember if you were local here.
He's in Charleston.
In Charleston. Actually, you can go to your local county extension office, and there's one in Charleston, and bring in a sample. Let them identify it for you, and then maybe get a better idea of really what's going on with that particular plant. That would probably help a lot.
Well, thank you.
Okay, right. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye. We'll go on here to Matt Toon. This is the next caller, line four. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I've called before a couple of times. On the last 2 years, I've had a smaller crop of onions and garlic. And this year, about 2 weeks ago, I planted two rows of garlic, and I spread quite a bit of 12-12-12 across the ground before I made my raised rows.
Mm-hmm.
And I made two raised rows. One with elephant garlic and another one with regular.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I just cover those raised rows with old maple or and oak leaves for the winter. And then in the spring, open them up a little bit as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really fertilized them in the spring. I just wonder, am I doing something wrong, or has it been the weather, or what? I'm hoping to get a little larger crops, what I'm getting at.
So, well, we know that a year or so ago, we had that really horrible cold spell. Nobody had good garlic 2 years ago. And then this year, didn't have much of a crop either?
Well, this year, it was better.
Yeah. I would have thought this would have been an okay year. Obviously, it was pretty cold and wet the beginning part of the year, but... which would have been fine. They are pretty heavy feeders. So it might be something that, you know, I don't know whether you want to get a soil test or not, but you might want to make sure that there isn't some issue there. And certainly,
I did mix a little bit of commercial topsoil that I got from Rural King across the top of the rows as I was building the top of them, you know,
before
I planted the cloves.
Right. So that would be good. And then I think the other thing maybe is just, and maybe we probably already talked about this too, but, you know, the bigger the better on the way of the cloves. So the bigger the clove that you plant, the better your end product's going to be.
Well, the
so to make sure you get really big cloves.
Garlic, you know, they are pretty good size.
Right,
cloves,
they are.
And then the regular small. So.
Now, is that... Do you order those from somewhere, or?
No, I just used last year's crop.
Well, I think probably the other thing I might have mentioned was to actually get some new stuff in, just to make sure that you're, because when you're saving those small ones, then you're not going to get as big. I mean, it's going to take you a little bit longer to finally get some bigger cloves to the point where then you're actually planting bigger cloves. Does that make sense?
I understand. I wondered if I was using year after year, I, you know, save some garlic and then replant.
Which is not
crop.
Right. If they're doing really well, I think that's a great thing to do because then you're almost selecting for those that do well in your area. But if they're not doing so well, you may find you really want to get something different in there just to see if you get a little better production. So you may find, I don't know if the farmers markets are still carrying garlic. There may be a few places that still have this year's garlic. But to actually really get some nice, good, heavy cloves and then to go ahead and plant a few of those, you know, if you have more space to plant a few of those and see if that doesn't help to get a little bit or little different genetics in there. And you may find that that helps you, too.
What about in the spring? Do you have any suggestions on what type of fertilizer, a spray fertilizer, or just throw out 12-12-12?
I think just a regular fertilizer is just fine. You don't, you know, if you have really pretty good, you know, soil fertility.
Don't need to spray Miracle-Gro?
No, I really wouldn't worry about that, to tell you the truth.
Oh, okay.
I really wouldn't do that. So that's fine.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you. And we'll
next
keep
year.
Going here.
Yeah,
see, wait till next
year. See, that's gardeners. We're sort of like Cub fans and next year.
Let's see. Go to line number three. Back here in Champaign, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Okay. I've got a pine tree that whose branches hang over the slab where I park my car. And it has been dripping some sort of very sticky stuff. and it plugged up my air conditioner, so I had $300 to have it fixed. I've got two questions. This is the first time, we've only lived here for 2 years, mm-hmm. and this is the first time this has happened. Can I expect this to happen every year?
Mm-hmm.
And the second question is, do you know of anything I can use to get this sticky stuff, gobs of it, off the windshield of my car?
Yeah, yeah. The second question, I'm not sure I'm a good person to ask about that. I would think a body shop place might be a really good place to ask about that, because I don't know. Now, what kind of pine is this?
I don't know what kind it is.
Okay, is it real soft, or is it?
It's long-needled. The needles turn brown and fall off every year.
Is it real soft? Does it feel soft, or is it kind of thick needles?
What feels soft?
The needles themselves?
Kind of, I guess.
Kind of. Yeah. The reason I ask it is that some pines get more problems that we've already kind of talked about. Austrian pines getting some issues. So I really wonder if, does the pine overall look healthy?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been dropping a lot of cones this year.
Which sometimes they'll certainly do that some years. I think probably, because there's a number of reasons why you might have, and it's usually just plain old sappy stuff. There's something going on there. Either there's an insect issue or a disease issue or some sort of physical damage.
Uh-huh.
Certainly if there's been damage from, if a car, a truck went through and actually hit those branches and it causes a wound, you'll get dripping from those.
Yeah, so that didn't happen. It's just too far
okay.
back.
So it's too far back. So it's usually somewhere along those lines, some sort of damage, or maybe I'm wondering about a disease issue.
Can I have it sprayed and get rid of the disease?
Well, we'd have to figure out what it is.
So
I think probably the big thing would be to, maybe get a sample, bring it in. And again, I'm sorry, I should pay attention.
He's in Champaign.
In Champaign. So you could come to our local extension office. It's 801 North Country Fair Drive. It's on the west end of town.
Yeah.
And we're there 8:30 to 5. You can just come in, bring a sample. We can figure out what kind of tree it is, figure out if there's actually a disease issue or insect issue for that matter, see what's going on, and then decide on whether it's something. To answer your question, is this something you have to count on every single year? Usually not, unless there is some sort of physical damage on a regular basis, something like that.
Okay, by a sample you mean a branch?
Right. Something that, if you see something that looks kind of odd, I'd certainly bring a branch sample from that kind of area so we can get a better idea maybe what's going on with
it. Okay, that's 801 Country Club.
Country Fair Drive.
Country Fair Drive.
It's just one block west of Mattis Avenue.
Yeah, okay. Thanks an awful lot.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Sure, good luck.
We have about 10 minutes left. Sandy Mason is here with us. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. It's our monthly show on lawn and garden care, and we certainly have time for other callers, and we have a couple of people here ready to go. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Next, we'll talk with someone else in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently moved back to a house I lived in earlier, and in the meanwhile, the backyard trees have totally shaded it over. It's a really big backyard, but I'd like to know if there are any food crops and or native plants that I could grow in shade.
As far as food crops, unfortunately, a lot of them need some sun. So you're getting a little bit of sun, maybe 4 hours? No?
No,
doesn't look good. Well, you can always try it. But probably your best food crops I would think about any of the leafy things. So like spinach and lettuce, they'll certainly take shade. Blueberries will take shade. So there might be a few in there. So you're going to have a diet of blueberries and lettuce and spinach.
What about raspberries?
Raspberries, oh boy, they'll certainly grow, but you don't always get the best production. If you could put them at least where they're getting some sun, they were like a border area, because if you see them in the woodland areas, they're often along the borders.
Right.
And they'll certainly grow in those areas. So you may, if you find a place where at least they get a few hours of sun, you could probably get into all the brambles, raspberries, blackberries, those kind of things. They'll certainly grow, but gooseberries actually will grow in some shade as well.
Okay.
So that might be some other ones. I'm trying to think. Unfortunately, most of the other, and you might just want to try a few things, and you may not get the production that you hope, but you may find that it's still just fine.
Well, blueberries are kind of hard to grow, aren't they? You have to acidify the soil.
Yeah, once you actually prepare the bed, and this is a good time to do that, is actually figure out where you're going to plant them, prepare the bed by adding some sulfur, help acidify the soil, maybe add some compost, and really get that area ready, and then come spring, it'd be ready to plant.
Oh, prepare it now.
Yeah, prepare it now. Let it sort of, you know, do its thing over the wintertime, and then plant it next spring. And you can certainly grow them around here.
What about service berries? Are they in understory trees?
Oh, good. Actually, service berries, absolutely. That's another one. That's a tasty crop. It's one of those that you probably have. The birds will probably get as many as you get, but it's still, you know, they look like little, I mean, they actually kind of taste like blueberries.
Yeah, so. I know what they are. So would that grow as an understory?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So good. You could have almost complete shade for service berries?
Yeah, they're another one of those that probably will produce more if they have a little bit more sun, but in our native environments, they're certainly in the shade. So
okay.
that's not a big issue.
So a bunch of berries, service berries, blueberries, same thing later. You know, service berries come in June, and then
right.
blueberries come in July or August, usually.
Yeah, probably a little earlier than that. But yeah, so probably those kind of things might be good, and that's about all I can think of right offhand.
The only one of those that's native would be service berries, right?
Well, technically some blueberry. No, yeah, probably service berries out of all the ones we talked about.
Some blueberries are native?
It depends on where you want to talk about, but North America, certainly.
Yeah, well, Michigan has them all over.
Yeah.
Oh, huckleberries. What about the brambles? Are any of those native?
Actually, you know, there may be some that are actually considered native. I don't know about that. You certainly find them in woodland areas, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're native, but they could very well be native.
Okay.
But that'd be something that would be worth doing a little checking on, too. But those are only things I can think of right offhand.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Try to get at least one, maybe two more. Downs is the next caller here, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Sandy, I have two dwarf Janela maples in my front yard, kind of as a foundation planting, and I've kept them sort of trimmed as they look a little Japanesey. But they have verticillium, and I know they have verticillium. I've kind of coaxed them along for maybe 5 years, and this year one of them just really went bad on one side, so they're on their way out. Do you have a suggestion? I need something that's not more than maybe 5, maybe 6 feet tall. Not real wide, but it's resistant and I can plant there. Oh, and it's on the east side. So it would be, you know, half day sun.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, Amur maples, for some reason, they really tend to get verticillium issues. So,
yeah.
And if people aren't familiar with that, it's actually wilt disease, and you kind of notice that, you know, this year that branch dies, next year this branch dies. So it's kind of this slow decline over a number of years. So unfortunate, and there's nothing you can do about it. It is a problem to replant things, as you're just saying, it is a problem if you replant things that are prone to verticillium. So that pretty much wipes out a lot of plants. I mean,
a huge number.
Yeah. So we actually have what's called a report on plant diseases that lists what plants are resistant. And right off the top of my head, for the category that you're thinking of, I can't really think of anything. Certainly, it kind of leaves out the maple family, the rose family.
Viburnum.
I don't know about viburnum. So I'm a little hesitant to tell you that that's okay.
No. That's gone.
So I would say probably to get a hold of that report on plant diseases on verticillium wilt, and it does list resistant plants.
Yeah, I've seen lists, and they're not very impressive.
Well, unfortunately, that's just one of those things. And it just doesn't mean that your next plant is going to get it, even if it was prone to verticillium. Maybe not. It just means you're going at a higher risk. By planting something that is prone to verticillium. And there's certainly some that are more prone than others. So there's usually, I think on our particular list, it says somewhat susceptible to susceptible, those kinds of things. So it kind of helps you a little bit on making some decisions on that.
The other thing that has bothered me, I mean, I've looked at lists, and some say that box, for instance, is resistant, and others say that it's susceptible, and they don't list.
It's not a...
You know, and so I'm really confused. I mean, I understand that gardening is a form of gambling, but
it's just socially acceptable gambling, I guess.
I just like to increase my odds a little.
Well, and unfortunately, it is one of those things because, especially when we were looking at disease susceptibility, you have to look at, you know, things like, you know, where is the plant? Is it growing in an area where it's actively growing? If it's actively growing, it's doing well. Unfortunately, boxwood has some winter issues, and if it's under stress, it's going to be more prone to disease issues. So one group may be looking at a really good situation for a boxwood. The other one was looking at an area maybe where it was more stressful and the boxwood tend to get it more.
Well,
so
that's why
it makes a difference on
the shade will be
that.
Really important because it has to be a plant that is okay with.
Yeah, and I don't know how you feel about evergreens, but certainly a lot of the evergreens might be an option. And there's certainly a lot of dwarf evergreens. It certainly is a different look than what you're talking about. But
yeah, that's a possibility.
But certainly, you know, with lots of great dwarf evergreens now that you might decide to like. So that might be one way to go. But I think you can get that report on plant diseases online if you, again, you go to Extension.
Yeah, I think I know how I can probably.
Yeah, I think if you go, you do a little bit of digging, you can find that particular one.
Okay.
Or you certainly could get it from our office or a local Extension office.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, good
much.
Luck. Tough
okay,
problem.
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry we have a couple people here we just, I can't take. We really here up against the end of the time. People always can look up their local Extension person. And if you're in Champaign-Urbana, it's Sandy. And talk to them, call them, stop in to their office. Anything really going, any event kind of things you might
want
to mention?
Well, I just want to mention this Saturday, actually, the city arborist for the city of Champaign, Bill Vanderwhite, and myself are doing a tree walk October 18th, Saturday, from 9 to 11. And it's you just come to the corner of Victor and University Avenues in Champaign. And it really highlights the University Avenue tree walk guide. So you get the free guide. And it's a great way to kind of see. It's amazing how many varieties of trees are just within a couple block area. So that's this Saturday at 9 o'clock.
Okay, very good. And look for Sandy and other people like her on the program Illinois Gardener Thursday nights 7 on WILL-TV. It's a live show. You can call in with questions. And next month, you'll be back
we'll talk
some more. Thank you very much.
Very good.
Sandy Mason, she is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program once a month, always on a Tuesday.